Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Doviak.
Hello, and welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. My name is Peggy Doviak, and I'm a certified financial planner practitioner, and I have a weekly show that you've tuned into where we talk about money issues. We talk about the stock market, but we talk about a lot more than that as well, and try to help you plan your financial life so that you can plan to prosper. I want to start out today with the Bulls and Bears market report and talk about the quarterly data, because we've just finished the first quarter of 2018, and it was quite a ride. It was really very stomach-churning, and we had two different market declines that neared what's classified as a correction level. But both times, the market bounced back up off of those numbers. So for the quarter, even with the bounce back, the Dow and the S&P 500 ended lower. Now, this is the first time that the Dow has had a negative quarter in 9 quarters. So it broke its 9-quarter winning streak, but it was only down about 2.5% as of the end of March, where the S&P was down just a little bit over 1%. Now, the NASDAQ was up, surprisingly, given the news about Facebook and all of the media coverage of it. Nevertheless, the NASDAQ closed up by 2.32%. Now, this is a fairly remarkable comeback when you look at where the market was February 8th, and the S&P 500, the broadest measure of large companies, was down by 3.46. So since it only closed 1.22 down, it made up that, even though there was a major increase in January, those gains were lost. But really, the market seems to be on a fairly stable footing right now. The idea that it would correct, but not stay corrected, not continue to decline, but bounce back, suggests that the market is relatively healthy. Now, of course, anything can happen, but right now, I'm not tremendously concerned about it. Now, gold went up a little bit this quarter because of all of the turbulence, all of the ups and downs in the market and all of the news. Gold is considered a safe harbor. Whether it really is a safe harbor or not is probably a conversation for a different show, but a lot of people view it that way. So when gold goes up, there's an indication that people are a little bit nervous. Oil was the biggest gain of the quarter at 7.75% up. This likely happened because of the fears of the Iran nuclear deal exploding, and anytime there's turmoil in the Middle East, the price of a barrel of oil goes up. So that's where we are on the quarter. Hopefully quarter two is a little less volatile, but there really isn't a lot of news suggesting that that's the case. So now let's apply this to you. What do you do when you're looking at the market and the market is down and you're getting a little nervous? How do you handle it? Well, the best way to handle it is actually to have planned ahead for it by looking at your risk tolerance level. Now, your risk tolerance level is more than just your gut instinct about how much risk you think you can take. Because the longer time horizon you have, the more the market can come back before you actually needed the money. The way your portfolio is put together will also impact how much you have to deal with market declines and falls. Your stock and bond allocation, the more stock you own, the more your portfolio will respond to a market movement. The more bonds you own, the more stable it is to market volatility. And we've already talked about how bonds have different risks. So there is risk, but it's a different kind of risk. So you might want to look at your asset allocation to make sure that it's really in keeping with what risk tolerance you think you have. And then finally, it's important to contextualize all of this inside of financial planning. Because if you have a goal of retiring in, say, 10 years, and you need a certain amount of money in order to be able to retire in 10 years, maybe it needs to be kind of a moderately aggressive portfolio to get there. But if you're conservative and you don't invest your portfolio in the asset allocation that lets you meet that need, 10 years from now, you can't retire and you're going to be really annoyed. So that doesn't mean you change the asset allocation necessarily, but it does mean that you need to look at everything as a picture, and maybe, rather than changing the allocation, you need to work 2 or 3 more years. Or maybe you want to work part-time in retirement. But you have to have a correlation between your cash flow needs and the portfolio makeup so that the way the portfolio is invested can get you there. Or change the need. Either one's acceptable, but there's got to be a connection between those two things. On the other hand, if you have more resources than you need, you don't necessarily have to have as high of a risk tolerance level as you might personally be able to stand. Now, if you want to invest that way, it's fine. I'm not telling you in this show ever how you should invest, because there's just too many things that go into it, and that's not what this show is about. But I am saying that it's very, very important to contextualize your portfolio within your larger financial life. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't do this. Thank you to Voices of Oklahoma, KVOY 104.5 FM, for the opportunity to share my ideas. Thank you also to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance. Welcome back to the Ask Peggy Show. I'm Peggy Doviak, and in this section, we're going to talk about things going on in legislation that might impact your financial life. So we've already talked last week about the fiduciary rule being vacated by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and then the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals the week ahead of that had strengthened it, but right now it really does look like the fiduciary rule is probably vacated. I was on a conference call yesterday listening to people who do this sort of analysis full time, and most of what they were saying agreed with what I had already told you, which is that with this Department of Labor not being tremendously enthusiastic about the fiduciary rule in the first place, and that might have been a little sarcasm, that they weren't likely going to try to pursue it to the Supreme Court. Also, the Trump administration has said that they have no interest in pursuing this rule, so it is likely dead on the vine. But there is a little glimmer of hope that I got off the call yesterday, which is that a lot of major firms have already put fiduciary practice into their marketing, and they're already talking about it. And according to yesterday's experts, once you say something like that in public to consumers, in order to stop being the fiduciary, you have to announce it. So in other words, you can't market yourself as a fiduciary and then change business models, not be a fiduciary, and not tell the consumers what you have done. Now, this might create a major marketing problem for the firms. Truthfully, I don't expect it to. I figure they'll find some way out of it, something to say, something about how this broadens our ability to give you, you know, services or something. But there is just an outside chance that the Department of Labor will go ahead and pick it up because they get pressure from the financial industry not to put them in a bad spot. Additionally, that SEC rule is still going forward. There's supposed to be some kind of an announcement this summer, but I was reading, and there is a real problem with the SEC fiduciary rule that you need to know about. What it covers is great, but the SEC does not regulate certain insurance products. For instance, they don't regulate indexed annuities. Now, the indexed annuities are the product that I talked about earlier where that was what came out of the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals, that it really was under the fiduciary standard. Unfortunately, an indexed annuity is not classified as an investment product by the SEC. And it's because of that guarantee that they build in with the growth. I'm not sure. I'm trying to make it sound like I understand why it wouldn't be an investment more than I actually do. It's still not regulated by it. So if the SEC creates a fiduciary standard for everything it regulates, the indexed annuity world could be on the outside of it, and it would require the insurance industry to adopt their own fiduciary standard, which, although it's possible, I'm not sure I think it's very likely. So I will continue to give you updates. I will let you know everything I know as soon as I do. So you want to make sure you tune in every week or listen to the podcast to get the information as I get it, because these news stories develop and I can only share with you as far as we've gotten within the story. So the second thing I want to talk about inside this legislative update really didn't fit anywhere else in the show well, and so I'm going to get away with putting it in legislative update, because without the fiduciary rule, it really is buyer beware. And I want to tell you a story and give you some ideas about something that's happened to me now twice within the last 3 weeks by two separate friends of mine who were in two completely different situations. One was an insurance product, and one was an investment strategy. So the firms weren't related, the people aren't related, but this has happened twice. And in both cases, the insurance agent had the client sign a form that the client didn't understand, didn't realize by signing it they had actually purchased the product. Now, I know it seems like that would be an easy thing not to have happen, but the way things are explained, sometimes it gets confusing. And the way it was explained to this client, then she was told she had to sign or they couldn't do a product comparison. And so she was absolutely unaware of the fact she had bought the policy when she signed her name. In the second circumstance, another person, again, a friend, was talking to a financial advisor, new engagement, and they ended up transferring money that they were holding with a different custodian to this new advisor's custody. It's a complicated story, too much for a radio show. Nevertheless, the actions made sense. They were opening an account so that they could get some advice from a person, but they wanted to leave the other money somewhere else. Completely their right to do it, but the other advisor had them sign a form that they did not understand that transferred the money over to the new advisor. Now, that was able to be reversed. The insurance product was able to be sold and gotten rid of, and everything worked out in all of the cases. However, what it leads to is you've got to be really, really careful before you sign your name to something. And understand that a person who is trying to sell you something does not have any legal liability to act in your best interest. Now, one could make the case that both of these things are pretty outrageous, but rather than making that case, what I'm going to tell you is, as the consumer, when you're looking at making a purchase, especially within the investment world or the insurance world, get the information, get the paperwork, take it home, read it before you sign it. If you have someone you really trust, get them to look at it too, and that could be a spouse or a friend or a parent or a child, but someone else looking at this, making sure that what you're signing is what you think you're signing. Because in both cases, had the client wanted it, there was nothing actually wrong with either product. It just simply wasn't what the client thought they were doing. So take it home and read it before you sign it. As you take the paperwork home, have the advisor or the agent write on the top of each form why you're signing it. For example, I have a document called a privacy principle that I have to have clients sign so they understand the privacy agreements that happen within my firm. So I explain it to them before they sign it. If you're transferring money, there is actually a transfer form, so don't sign your name and have that advisor write it in pencil on the top of the form so that then when you go back and look at it, you will know what's going on. If you don't understand what the person is saying, ask for clarification. This doesn't mean that they're doing a bad job, and it doesn't mean that they're trying to pull one over on you. Because remember, these transactions happen thousands of times a day, absolutely legitimately, where both parties understand what's going on, and it works well. But sometimes it doesn't, and it's just odd to me that it's now happened to friends of mine twice within the last 3 weeks. And so I want you to be careful that you ask, what does it mean? Don't let people intimidate you with marble tables and navy blue suits and all this stuff hanging on the walls. If you don't understand it, don't sign it until you do. Thank you to Voices of Oklahoma, KVOY 104.5 FM, for the opportunity to share my ideas. Thank you also to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance. Welcome back to the Ask Peggy Show. Now it is time for the Plan Your Prosperity section, and today I want to talk about homeowners insurance. And I want to give you a view from about 50,000 feet and tell you some things that you should probably look at in your policy, as well as making sure you understand what your policy covers and what it doesn't cover. Now, remember that insurance is state regulated. So if you're listening outside of Oklahoma, and even if you're listening inside of Oklahoma, it's really important to talk to your insurance agent and make sure that everything is what you think it is and that you understand it and that everything is compliant. There is an ad on television that I have seen a number of times, and it talks about what is and isn't covered in what I think is a homeowner's policy. And they laugh about having like volcanoes and zombies are covered. And okay, zombies may or may not be covered. I don't know. If there is a zombie apocalypse, that's probably between you and your agent, and you're going to need to work it out. But the problem with the ad that makes me crazy when I hear it is that volcanoes aren't covered because volcanoes are earth movement. So there's two major classifications of things that are often not covered within your homeowner's policy. And those things are earth movement and flooding. So to go back to earth movement, that would include things like landslides. It would include having your home filled with molten lava because the volcano got you. It would also include earthquakes. Anything that is a natural earth movement phenomenon, even I understand that there's a lot of issues right now with drilling and earthquakes, that earthquake coverage is not likely part of your base policy. Now, that can be handled, all of the earth movement issues can be handled a couple of different ways. The first is to find a policy that would cover it, or to add a rider to your existing policy. That rider adds on coverages that aren't included in the base policy. And while we're talking about riders, if you keep a lot of valuable things in your home, and this could take so many different directions, but it might be jewelry, it might be firearms, it might be cash, but if you have major expensive assets in your home, it is really important that your insurance agent know about it. Because to get those items covered, you may need a rider because there are limits on coverage in your traditional policy. And if you own more of something than your limit covers, then you don't get that coverage. But back to the volcano. So make sure that if you're in an area and you're worried about earth movement, that you can add the rider. Now, when earthquakes become more common, and I'm assuming volcanoes as well, but I don't live in Hawaii, then you have to add a separate policy. So it's important to be sure that you have the coverage that is appropriate to you, appropriate to the area, but you may not have that earth movement coverage that you think you do. The second issue that catches a lot of people is flood insurance. Now, floods happen two different ways. The first is the pipe bursts in your house, and suddenly you have a lake in the living room from your burst pipe. Now, if you catch it within a timely fashion and you don't let a lot of secondary stuff happen because you have a lake in your living room and you did not bother dealing with it, then your homeowner's policy probably covers it. You know, I say probably because, again, you should check with your agent, but that's the kind of thing that is a common coverage. However, if you live close to a creek and it's never flooded before, but it floods this year and it comes into your house, that is not covered under your traditional homeowner's insurance. Instead, you need to buy a flood policy. The only place that those are available right now, to my knowledge, is through FEMA. And so it is a government policy that is flood insurance, and so you get FEMA flood, and if you're in a flood zone or if you're close to something and you're afraid it's going to flood, then you can get the coverage for it. As you're looking at property, you want to see whether or not it's inside of a flood zone, because that would give you more information about the kind of coverage that you would want or making decisions about the property. So floods from the exterior, that can be through a lake that rises, that can be through a river that rises. It could just be rain that absolutely won't stop. Remember, several years ago, we had the rain in June that never ended in Oklahoma, and many things flooded that year that had never flooded before. So it's very important to make sure that you have the flood insurance that you need. Now, into some more of the weeds about homeowners' policies, it's important to look at the kind of structure that you own. Insurance policies are sold by HO, followed by a number, designations. And different HO policies cover different things. So if you own an apartment, there's a content policy. If you own a condo, there's a drywall in policy. If you own a home, there's the main coverage. You need to be careful that outbuildings are covered. You need to find out how items are handled when they're other places. But basically, you can work that out with your agent. What I wanted to make sure that you understood today was the importance of knowing the big characteristics of what your policy covers and what it doesn't. Thank you to Voices of Oklahoma, KVOY 104.5 FM, for the opportunity to share my ideas. Thank you also to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance. Welcome back to Ask Peggy About Your Finances. And this section of the show is where I answer questions that people have asked me, either by putting them on the Facebook page of Ask Peggy or by actually talking to me in person. And so I've had two people ask me whether or not they should take their pension as a lump sum at the time that they retire, or whether they should take it as a stream of income with monthly payments. Now, that question is entirely too specific to be able to answer on the radio, but I do have some things that you should think about if you're trying to decide whether or not to take, and it might be a 401k, it might be a pension, that lump sum of money, or whether you should take monthly payments instead. And I want to start out by defining the word annuity. An annuity at its base is just a stream of income. All of the other things that we think about with annuities, like surrender fees or expenses, those are just add-ons. A pure annuity is just a stream of income, so that your Social Security payment is actually an annuity. So just because they call it an annuity by your employer does not necessarily make it a bad thing. So you'd want to look at the fees associated with taking that stream of income. Sometimes they're fabulously low. If they're high, then that might be an idea as, you know, about not taking it as a stream of income. But I don't want you to just decide off the bat, because they might call it an annuity, that you wouldn't want to do it. So look at the fees. Also, remember that anytime you take an annuity, you might be able to take it on your life as well as the life of a spouse or a significant other. But should something happen to both of you at the same time, the rest of that money is gone. You cannot have a tertiary or third beneficiary onto a pension stream of income. It can be for your life and your spouse's life, but at that point, the income ends. Additionally, if you annuitize it, that stream of income cannot vary month to month. So once you say, yes, I want the stream of income, they're going to decide that day how much it is, and that's what you get every month for the rest of your life and maybe the rest of your spouse's life. If you needed more money, you don't have access to it. If you wanted to hold it and let it grow, you don't have access to that either, although you certainly could reinvest an annuity payment that you received into some other kind of an account. But it's a static, organized, here's your stream of income. Now, the flip side of that is that can be a really good thing because it's very easy to budget when you know how much that monthly check is going to be for. And you don't have to worry about making the investment choices. When you take the lump sum, you have to make the investment choices or hire someone to do it for you. Then you have the risk that the market could go down and that principal amount could drop. You also have the upside of the growth. You have the upside that you can create a beneficiary for that lump sum of money, and it's not just gone. If you opt for the lump sum, you want to be very careful that you don't really overspend at the beginning of retirement. We had that question last week because it's probably the biggest sum of money you've ever seen at one time in your life. And so the sense can be of, wow, we're set. This is good. It's going to be okay. We can do this. But remember, you need to create that cash flow statement. You need to decide what you can live on, and you need to try to hold it to that level. You want to look, and you probably need a financial planner to help you do this. You want to look at the difference between the lump sum that they're offering you and the present value of the stream of income that you'll be receiving. And you can figure out what kind of rate of return assumptions they've made with the money. That can be done with the time value of money calculator. And like I said, a financial planner can help you with that. But you want to see that rate of return so that then you can begin to decide if you're trying to figure, should I take the lump sum? Can I earn more than that? And again, it's always that risk. When you take it as a lump, as an annuity stream, that market risk just goes off the table. So really, the correct answer is it depends on what you're comfortable doing, and it depends on how you want to organize your finances. You just want to make sure that you're careful. You just want to make sure that you don't run out of money. And you want to look at everything to be sure you absolutely understand the decision before you make it. I can't believe how fast the show has gone. Don't forget to go to the Ask Peggy Facebook page, and I'll see you next week. Thank you to Voices of Oklahoma, KVOY 104.5 FM, for the opportunity to share my ideas. Thank you also to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at PeggyDoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.